Hello, and welcome to Sustainable Statement Podcast. It's the second episode with Carla, who is somatic experience practitioner, as well as sex and intimacy coach. Today we are discussing intimacy with yourself as well as your partner, and it includes a lot of personal work as well as development. We share tips for self-love and grounding, questions to ask your partner or a new date to get to know each other better. And as Carla says, self-awareness is the sexiest thing. So let's begin. Hi, Carla.
Hello there.
How are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm all good. Thank you. I'm so happy to have you here again after our last amazing podcast. And today we want to talk more about sexuality, isn't it?
Yes, I'm excited for this.
And let us know more about what you do with it and how professional you are.
Well, that would be a pleasure. I am completing a PhD in psychology, and I'm also completing a master's of science in sexology. I am a somatic experiencing practitioner, and I'm also a sex and intimacy coach. So I like to join the two by bringing greater body and somatic awareness into the ways that we relate and connect to one another and ourselves.
That's amazing. And I believe so many people need more of it. But then it's also a bit of a taboo topic to talk about in the couples, or so many of them are afraid to ask for help with it or find a coach for it.
Yes, that's very true. Often, you know, to get to this point of having any kind of therapeutic work with sex, a couple often needs to be kind of deep into the relationship before there's a willingness to talk about the intricacies and the emotional connections, you know. And I think it's a really beautiful thing when couples come to me with, you know, we're curious about how to keep growing together. And I find that to be it's a very heartful experience for me, where I can provide exercises and listening and a holding space for their exploration process.
sorry. I really like how you said that couples come to grow together. And that's one of the parts in relationship where couples grow through every experience, through everything.
Yes, they can. There are some times where couples don't always know how to work through conflict, and that can be a point of greater disharmony later down the line. So I really like to emphasize conflict resolution skills in the beginning, because I think having that capacity to listen to one another, to listen to ourselves and what our truth is, and then having the courage to voice that, they're all kind of different things that make up this whole experience. I think having conflict resolution skills, being able to look at the bigger picture and not lose sight of the goal, which is greater unity, greater connection, a sustainable kind of love. You know, it really requires us to move through the discomforts of, you know, the shame or the shyness or the fears that we might experience in voicing our truth. But it's so essential.
Yeah, it's really essential for a healthy relationship, so none of them feel like they're left out or not heard, and that just really brings it to a beautiful thing.
Yes, I have found with regard to communication that nonviolent communication skills are a useful tool, because it helps to own our feelings. It's a set of There are a number of exercises around how to take an experience that's happening around us and own that experience of, well, I actually feel this way about it. And I think so much of being able to navigate this this back and forth that happens between couples is an ownership and responsibility of how we ourselves are feeling. And so often when I begin having sessions with people, I communication is the first thing I go to. How do they fight? How do they make up? How do they communicate their truth to each other and within themselves? You know, because sometimes people are not honest with themselves about what's really important to them. And then that becomes a point of contention, potentially, where you're functioning from a place of a perception of yourself, but your authentic self deep inside actually needs something else. And so, you know, a lot of couples work before it becomes couples work is actually individual work of getting honest with ourselves and being aware of what our true needs are. So that's why I love the mixture so much of somatic therapy with sex and intimacy work, because so much of it is about that investigation of understanding what is truth inside the body.
Yeah, that's really true. But how could you suggest people to start looking what their true self is? Is there any exercises or is there any questions to ask yourself?
Yeah.
Or any signs that, for example, even you're not being true to yourself?
Yeah. So oftentimes there's this gnawing kind of discomfort. You know, I would say that discomfort is a real telling sign that something is off about your experience, that your being is not fully integrated. We all have different things where, you know, the healing journey, our personalities, they're not all developed the same way. There are parts of us that are more mature than other parts, you know, and this is normal. But I think looking at discomfort, you know, is a way of getting clear on something that could be wrong. So noticing when that discomfort occurs, noticing what that discomfort feels like in the body, noticing if there are any memories associated with it, you know, having an exercise of being very aware of how your past can affect your current perception of events, you know? So in an example where someone may have had an emotionally unavailable parent, you know, where their parents fed them and gave them clothing and took care of them in the overt sense, but may have neglected the emotional needs of validating the child's emotions and offering spaces for expression. That child might grow up feeling like they can't get their needs met. So then it's almost like a self-defeating attitude that they carry around about, you know, why should I bother asking someone for, you know, for clarity, for help, for union, you know, if I have this past that, you know, when I did ask for help, I was met with a cold stare or judgment or harsh words, you know? So when our past drives our present, that can be a dangerous thing because you're not seeing clearly. And that can make or break relationships, you know, because so much of this sense of connection is this act of being seen. So if one's eyes are so clouded to the past, you're not able to fully see your partner, and that can lead to greater problems of intimacy down the line.
So how would you heal those problems?
Yeah, so that can be taken from multiple different angles. A huge part of what I do is about connecting back to the body. So I'm going to focus a little bit around that. I would say that re-owning the abandoned parts of ourselves is an immensely valuable experience. So having moments of intimacy with oneself, and I don't mean that in the sense of, you know, you're masturbating. I mean this like deep, true intimacy of filling your own cup and practicing a deep self-love that is rooted from the inside out rather than the outside in. You know, often we look for outside experiences that guide and determine our value and, you know, our sense of self. But getting in that physical practice of embodying your full experience. So that might mean doing some things, some exercises around the house of being more grounded in oneself and kind of having a deeper practice of, you know, having a deeper practice of awareness. So for example, the way we walk, you know, how do we walk? Is it relaxed? Is it stressful? What do we need to be more calm? Do we need to make a cup of tea? What does the cup feel like in our hands? Can we take a deep breath before we take a sip? Can we sensually, you know, take a breath out over the tea so that the heat disperses a little? How does that feel like to have this sensual relationship with a nurturing cup of tea? You know, so looking at intimacy, not just as a couple's exercise, but rather intimacy with oneself. You know, how do we connect with our physical selves? When we take a shower, do we roughly pass the soap around our body, or do we take deep breaths and massage our arms and massage our head when we wash our hair? You know, these are practices that allow us to slow down and to read our bodies better, you know?
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And I believe more people should experience that. However, so many people are afraid to sense their own self. They just don't notice those things. And if they're in a relationship and they feel like there's something wrong with them, they often feel like, oh, it's not me, it's my partner. It's him making me uncomfortable. While often there are things you need to clarify in yourself and understand yourself better so you can communicate it.
Yes, yes, indeed. An exercise that I like to do is kind of a writing exercise, or it could be an artistic exercise of looking at the different roles that we embody and how we respond in each roles. So for example, if in my day job, I am an authoritarian leader, I'm in charge of a team of people, for example, you know, do I take that role with me when I go home? You know, how do I treat my partner when I shut the door to our home? Do I switch personas, so to speak? You know, a lot of people take their work identity as their dominant self. And so that can be a little bit difficult, for example, in an environment that is of reciprocity and give and take, you know, if you are used to being in charge, for example. So yeah, I would say that there's an important need to look at the way we manifest different emotions as well. You know, when we fight, do we slam the door in anger? And what could we do instead? So really just having a self-awareness of what aspect of us, what persona of us dominates in different environments, you know, because maybe the slamming of the door is a reflection of that inner child that never got to be heard as a toddler. And they were running around, you know, asking for validation and love and attention, and they didn't get it. And maybe it manifests as an adult with, you know, I must slam this door to prove my point, you know?
Yeah, that's so true. However, I just want to step back, for example, for people who are just starting with self-awareness, who have never done it before, and who are even afraid to start of being more self-aware. So what would be first steps?
Yeah.
Especially it's hard when you're full of emotions. And for example, you think that your partner has done something wrong, but so then people tend not to look at themselves.
Yes.
Just how to start looking at yourself in those situations, how to stop and reflect and really tune into yourself.
Yeah. So the thing I love about somatic experiencing is the way that it understands how to resolve different levels and degrees of stress in the body. So one of the techniques is this act of titration, which is taking on like a very small piece of something that is very stressful and looking at it and being with it and being with it with all of you for as long as it can be managed, and then giving yourself space away from that trigger, so to speak. So having this practice of taking just a little bit of that discomfort and sitting with it and allowing the body to reprocess it, you know, like there's no need to take massive points of stress and looking at it all at once, because that would be way too much. And we're not, you know, revolution, it's not one big step. It's many small sustained steps of improvement. And so I would say this technique of titration, taking a small piece of that discomfort, of those emotions, and being with it. And then seeing, well, what can I do to find peace and completion with this small piece? You know, so that might mean moving through it. You know, that might mean shaking it out, you know, like, oh, this is too uncomfortable, like I'm just going to shake and just allow gravity to take me. It could mean, you know, that you give yourself little hugs or sing songs to yourself. Like the important thing to remember here is that this kind of self-awareness process is, it's deep work, you know, and our brains are wired to remember the negative much more so than the positive. And also another thing that's important is that, you know, most of the messages go from our gut to our brain rather than our brain to the rest of our bodies. So when something is felt as overwhelming or stressful, it's actually the body that sends the message to the brain, and then it gets interpreted, and then it becomes something, you know, an anxiety response or a shutdown response.
Yeah. And those interpretations aren't always right, especially if it's with another person.
Exactly.
Because after that, I think you need to look at the other person's experiences and what the other person reacts to something, or if he snaps because maybe it's nothing serious for you, but maybe it's a big trigger for your
exactly
partner.
And this is the important piece about, you know, finding that cohesion and connection, sustained connection, and why awareness is so important. Because, you know, if we are having messages sent from the body to the brain that tell us this is a fearful experience, you know, this is not positive, then it will be interpreted with that kind of lens. And then again, we're not seeing our partners clearly for who they are. So I think before getting to that point of understanding where our partners are, is getting to that space where you can really be present to their experience. So being grounded in who you are and being able to offer as much of a blank slate as possible, which is a very difficult thing. I emphasize that it's an incredibly difficult practice of, because, you know, our past can drive, it can drive us in the present. And so to kind of have that safety of giving them a blank slate to have their own experience is not an easy thing. But that's why I like to think of relationships as being not a 50-50, but as two people at 100% coming together, you know, because if you're at 50,
that's a very nice quote.
Well, it's not mine. I don't actually know who said it. And it's not a direct quote, but the message of it is, I think, very powerful, because when we're coming at something as a unique whole, we're coming together to really co-create. And what a lot of people do instead is to numb the pain through connections or situations or physical things that distract us from that pain. And so what we do is just recreate that pain in different scenarios, really. And it can be very harmful to future connections. So one of the things I personally have done where I, in dating situations, on a first date, actually, I will ask, you know, what kind of emotional work, like what are your biggest triggers and issues that you've worked through in life, and how have you worked through it? And do you feel available to begin something new? And so, you know, I don't ask that so directly, but it's important to me, because if people are still processing grief over a past relationship, or they're processing the abandonment of, you know, a parental figure, or they're grieving some kind of trauma that happened in their lives, that will inform potentially how they show up as a partner, you know?
Yeah, and that can get really toxic. And as well, it's just really sad how many people just break up, or something happens, or they have trauma and they just want another person to date to, I don't know, take their minds away or not to feel lonely or something like that. But the truth is, it never works like that.
It's so true. And the thing,
it just creates more pain, actually.
Yeah,
at the end.
And the thing is, like, these emotions are valid. You know, loneliness is a valid emotion. But the thing is, it's what we do with it that matters. You know, another question that I love to ask in a dating scenario is, how do you suffer? You know, because people have all kinds of ways of dealing with pain. And so what we're looking for isn't necessarily perfection, right? We're looking for people who can process their pain in a way that doesn't become a full-on additional baggage for their partner, you know, but also is not self-destructive, you know. So it's not someone who has the weight of the world on their shoulders and carries that all alone, and they're in this you know, martyr place of, you know, everybody hurts me and, you know, I have no help. Some people go that route. Other people go the route of, you know, I'm fine. It's other people that are the problem, you know, and refuse to look at how they've contributed to the issues that led to a conflict. And so asking people how they suffer and how they resolve their pain is kind of an unusual question, but I think is also an important one. Another one is, you know, how do people experience their joy? You know, are they doing it with other people? Are, you know, what is it, how do they celebrate? You know, because that can also be telling. How do they celebrate victories. So looking at people and their different dimensions and being curious about how they show up to the world in those different dimensions can be very telling.
Yeah, I was just thinking on the topic that you are a really interesting partner to get on dates with. Like, you know, from my later experience, I don't really get those deep questions. And I think it's just like everyone started looking more into person, not only asking, oh, so what do you do in your free time? Which is obviously interesting and great, but just getting know of the person who is deep down inside you.
Yeah.
Because people often get into relationships when like, oh, our hobbies match and you're really attractive and you seem like a nice person, but that's not enough.
No, it definitely isn't. I actually had a scenario like that where someone said something very similar to that, where, you know, there was an overlap of hobbies. And it was like, I thought that would be enough. And I'm like, no, you can have similar hobbies, but go about them in completely different ways. So then what matters is, you know, especially if you're looking for a more of a life partnership or a long-term relationship, is looking at how those, if there are shared values, you know, and looking what those shared values are, and then looking at how those shared values are practiced in real life scenarios, you know, because maybe two people have the same value of truth telling and being truthful, but maybe that interpretation of what scenarios is it appropriate to be completely truthful about and, you know, what scenarios are not might be completely different. So it's not just looking at, are there shared hobbies? Are there shared values? But do we understand, process, and live life in a way that is compatible and complementary? You know, because there's a difference between being compatible and then being complementary to one another, you know? I think these are very deep and big questions. And I think self-awareness for me is just the sexiest thing, because people are coming with their emotional selves developed. And I think one of the frustrating things about being socialized as a woman for me has been the way that the emotional labor often falls on women to drive and create the relationship, the safe container. You know, often it's the woman's role to, you know, send the birthday cards to the family members rather than a husband, you know, or, you know, be the caretaker of the family when someone is ill or becomes elderly. So in all these ways, like, we are socialized to be the emotional container of a family structure. And I happen to find it incredibly beautiful when another partner comes with that work completed. Or, I mean, because we're never fully complete, right? We're always doing some kind of growth. In theory, we should all be growing consistently.
Yeah, especially in relationship, you should help each other grow. And if you're just standing in the same position, if you feel like you're not growing with your partner, it's not a great relationship. And you also need to constantly keep learning about your partner. Because, you know, when you're single and you think, oh, in this year, I grew up so much. So if you are a year with your partner, he has grown in a year as well.
Yeah. Yeah. This whole growth thing is a beautiful thing to consider. You know, that's another question that I love asking in a dating situation. You know, like, how have you grown? And what are ways that you want to continue to grow? You know, because that gives you, rather than asking, you know, where do you see yourself in 5 years and like other questions that feel almost like a business interview, I think it can be a lot more telling to look at whether people even think about their growth as something they value, you know, because they might not even know how to answer that. And if that's an important thing for you and they don't know how to answer that, then you've already got your answer that this might not be the person for you. And so, you know, I think it's important to be willing to ask uncomfortable questions, especially as women. We're socialized to accept what we're given without questioning whether we should go for more. And like, I get so angered by that. I think we create life, you know, we nurture this life-giving energy. And I think when we have this greater self-awareness and we're in tune with the intimacy within, and we're connected to our inner sensuality and we love ourselves for who we are, that these are the seeds to a beautiful experience. And so asking hard questions is really an expression of self-love, you know, to say, I have these healthy boundaries because I've nurtured and expanded on my inner self. And I want people in my life who can be, who can co-create with me, who are available, who can listen to me on a hard day and not just celebrate the good days, you know?
That's really important. And I believe also that women are not as expressive on what they like when it comes down to sex.
Very true.
It's more about taking than from men and what they like.
Yeah.
And they sometimes feel like, oh, no one's really asking them, but need to really be communicating with it. Because sometimes, as we before said, you can notice it from discomfort, but there's also a sense when it's like, it's not uncomfortable, but it's not that great either.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. There are some amazing tantra intimacy and sex exploratory courses I've done. And some of them are about pushing those boundaries a bit of how we default respond to certain dynamics, and breaking that habit of, you know, not saying anything and not being curious about how our own body is interpreting what's happening. And so a lot of it is learning how to say yes with a full enthusiastic yes. You know, and if it's not a full enthusiastic yes, if there are doubts to work through, if there are questions that you need to ask, to really honor that it's not a full yes, and to really take that pause and give yourself space to get to know.
I think the partner should really react if your yes isn't enthusiastic.
I think both people need to be fully willing, available, and enthusiastic about each other. And so when one side has more questions, when one side isn't fully being responsive, particularly with women where we're taught to take a more passive role, you know, it can lead to more complications and conflicts down the line. So like, I'm really an advocate of slow intimacy, of building up to sexual connection through being present with not just asking the hard questions, but seeing how it feels in the body for each of you, you know, and that could mean different things. There's this amazing, I have a couple friend of mine. The two of them were rather scared of talking about feelings, and they set up this ritual, which I think is a fantastic idea, where at night before going to bed, they would both climb under the covers, and that would be their safe space. It would be like a little cocoon where they could admit deep, dark secrets about things they were afraid of. You know, it wasn't just how was your day? It was, you know, this brought up real fear when you said this, it made me think you wouldn't be around. You know, they were able to work through that communication, whatever communication kinks were coming up in the relationship, by creating quite literally an igloo with their blanket and being in the safe container. So I think having that creativity of seeing, okay, well, how is it that you communicate and experience life that makes you feel safe? And then how is it that I experience and communicate and experience with life, you know, and then creating a space together where both people can feel seen and heard. So that might mean something unusual, you know, like, you know, maybe, you know, if there are kids in the picture, you know, then you have a hotel night, and rather than having wild sex, it's like full, it's full intimacy of connection, which can include sex, but isn't the primary force, you know, where intimacy is the grounding force. So there's lots of ways, I think, to get to that, but having that openness is the beginning step.
Yeah, and just also, as you said, it's so important to reflect on yourself and be grounded with yourself, and then come to your partner, yes, understanding yourself.
Yes, very true.
There's so much to think about, and it's like whoever is trying to practice this, just to remember that it takes time. It's not one thing. It's a constant work, yes, learning and growing.
For sure. And I guess that's where I would end with, is to say that, you know, it can be very overwhelming to look at all the emotional work that's left to do. Like, rather than looking at it as, oh my God, there's just so much to learn, we can take it in small chunks. And what we can, with this self-awareness, we can bring to future partners this transparency of saying, you know, I'm working on this issue right now. It manifests in, you know, an anxiety when somebody doesn't text me back right away. I go off on this, like, panic attack, and I don't know how to control that yet. You know, like, when we interact, would it be all right with you to keep that in mind and be available to me by being responsive when we're messaging back and forth? You know, that would be a way to take responsibility for how you're feeling about things, and then also not blaming the other person because they don't know your issues, and then asking for help and saying, I'm still working on this. Can you be available in this way, by being responsive, you know, responding within X amount of time? You know, is that something that you can support me in as I learn how to deal with this anxiety? And that's a really mature way of approaching connection, you know?
Yeah, that's really good. And this example could be applied, yes, to so many different situations. Yes. And actually, when you work with yourself and you're open with what you're working and you tell other people, you feel more accountable to keep working. And then if you have support, that can even make you grow so much. And then it even deepens their relationship as well.
Yes, for sure. Together. And I think that's where a lot of people get stuck, because they're often afraid that if they say these needs out loud, that there's a lot of vulnerability that can come with that. You know, so if you're not used to being so vocal about your needs, the sense of that rejection might come might be very strong. And so, you know, I think having the skillful communication of being able to, for the other person to affirm, you know, you're an important person in my life. I want you to feel safe. And, you know, maybe it's a lot to ask of me to respond within 2 hours, but I feel like I can respond to your text messages within 4 hours. would that be something you can do, you know, like to be able to work on your panic attack, to manage it if I'm getting back to you within 4 hours? And then having that dynamic between both sides where you're negotiating boundaries and meeting each other's needs together.
That's such a great end to this. I really thank you so much for the talk, and I really hope that whoever was listening, it helped them to understand a little bit themselves and maybe even make that first step of working on yourself and solving the issues. Because again, it's always easiest just to let's just break up. That's all. Not working. That's all. Well, yeah. Every relationship.
Beautiful words. Thank you so much for your time and for this platform to share about different ways we can connect with each other better. And for the audience, feel free to connect with me for sessions at carlacarrera.com, CarlaCarreira. I have some great content that I'm putting together on my website. So feel free to go check that out to download some worksheets and other helpful information.
Yeah, it will be a special freebie when this podcast is released.
Fantastic.
I'll leave the links. So thank you again.
Thank you. You as well.
Have a fantastic day.
Bye.